Welcome to Uncover the Human, where every conversation revolves around enhancing all the connections in our lives.
Whether that's with our families, coworkers, or even ourselves.
When we can be our authentic selves, magic happens.
This is Christina Amigoni.
And this is Alex Cullimore.
Let's dive in.
Authenticity means freedom. Authenticity means going with your gut.
Authenticity is bringing 100% of yourself, not just the parts you think people want to see, but all of you.
Being authentic means that you have integrity to yourself.
It's the way our intuition is whispering something deep-rooted and true.
Authenticity is when you truly know yourself. You remember and connect to who you were before others told you who you should be.
It's transparency, relatability, no frills, no makeup, just being.
Hello and welcome back to season two of Uncover the Human. I can't believe we have already had a full season under our belts. This is kind of crazy.
It is crazy. I still remember when we were doing the first episode that I forgot to record. So then we had to do it again.
I kind of wish we'd had video recordings at that time because I was in my closet, I believe, trying to dampen some sound because I did not have a good microphone at that point. if only that background was visible.
Yeah, I've done a few from the kids' rooms sitting on the floor because they were smaller rooms. Mm-hmm. And probably tried a couple of closets. The evolution of podcasting.
It has been wild. I'm glad that A, they have some better microphones that are more easily accessible, and B, that we've kind of been on this journey for long enough. It feels a little more standard. We've met a ton of awesome people through this, which we tried to go through at the end of last season too, just if you want to recap on our guests. But it's been really, really quite interesting. It's been super fun.
It has been. Yeah. I've got a whole setup now. I've got lights all over the place.
That's what I need background. To get.
Yeah, I found these lights. They're pretty cheap. They're like $30 on Amazon, and they don't create like weird shadows and things.
I'm gonna have to do that because currently, as is actually happening right now, it's very weather dependent, and that cloud is gonna change my face entirely.
Indeed. Yeah. So we're going to talk about assessments because we love assessments. Doesn't everybody?
I think anybody who likes, like, you know, some self-discovery has done a lot of assessments. So we've been through, I think, the ringer at this point. We've even come up with a couple of assessments that we'll be releasing here. And we have all of our own, all of our own opinions at this point on good assessments and different ones we've taken. So we thought we'd share some of our favorites as well as some of our results and how we apply those and kind of go in the spirit of, looking back and changing what we want to do going forward. It's a good time to look at assessments.
It is. I find it very refreshing to do assessments and to read the results. And also that continuous learning piece of if I can understand a little bit more about myself and how others may see me, I can make the necessary adjustments.
Yeah. There's three main ones we can talk about today, we can talk about the Working Genius one, which is a productivity assessment. There's the Standout assessment, which is a little bit more about your character strengths. And the other one that we can talk about a little bit, because it's got some good actionable stuff in it, is the Genos Emotional Intelligence assessment. Those are all pretty fun ones. We won't go through too many of our specific results on the Emotional Intelligence one, if that one is changing over time, but the other two have very discreet and easy to talk about results, and those are some of our favorites, having gone through many at this point.
yes. Yeah, I've gone through the VIA character one, which you and I both got an email asking us to take it again after the pandemic to see if our results have changed, which would be interesting to do. I've done Clifton Strengths. I've done Enneagram, which I still don't remember what my Enneagram number is.
I can't figure out Enneagram for life of me. I took it and it was like, this is your result. And it's got two wings on it. And I have no idea.
Yeah. That's pretty much how I felt about the Enneagram. And I know a lot of people really value it and work with it. It was definitely more obscure for me to understand. And I found myself that I resonated to a lot of the definitions before I knew what my results was. So then when I got my results, I was like, huh, okay. And what about everything else?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was an interesting one. And I did DISC a long time ago. Can't remember my results there either. And I know most people know their Myers-Briggs four letters better than they know their blood type. I'm not one of those people.
I do not remember my name.
Yeah, see, I'm not Myers-Briggs. I think I was an I. That's basically it. I don't even remember what the other ones are supposed to stand for.
Yeah, I did this one recently again, but it was the same result as before. Myers-Briggs is a super interesting one. If anybody hasn't taken it, it's more about kind of personality. They call it the 16 mm-hmm. personality test as well, because there's 16 versions of these. There's four letters, two of them, two different, I guess, answers or ends of a spectrum on each of them. Mm-hmm. And so 16 possibilities. And they added, I think, a fifth one now for like turbulent versus assertive. And so it's a whole thing. But that one's super interesting for, I think, personal knowledge, because it does. Mm-hmm. When I was reading it, I was like, well, that pretty much fits. That's pretty accurate. So that one's a good one if you want to do some self-discovery as far as personalities go. These other ones we're talking about are a little bit more around strengths and just yes. different ways you apply yourself and how you work.
Yeah. And how others work with you and understand how you can best fit in a job, in a role, in a team, in a company, and understanding really like, why is my energy getting drained in these situations and not in these other situations? And so how do you in this great resignation, great awakening, whatever you want to call it, period. And a lot of people are looking into finding purpose at work and not titles, positions, and career ladders as much or at all, mm-hmm. apparently. understanding what kind of seat on the right bus is the one for you would definitely help a lot.
Yeah. So I think we should go like personal to more macro. So I would say maybe just talk mm-hmm. about standout first, then go through working genius. Yeah. We can talk about some EI at the end, since that's more full relational.
Yes, sounds good.
Awesome. So the standout report, I don't have as much background on this. I just remember going through the results. Do you know as much on the standout, where this comes from?
So it is from Marcus Buckingham and the ADP research group. And it basically comes up with 9 strengths roles. And that's how you get ranked, really. The 9 ones are teacher, creator, stimulator, provider, connector, influencer, equalizer, pioneer, and advisor. And this, the assessment itself, like very other assessments, it's only 10, 15 minutes. And you don't really know, you can't really predict which one you're going to fit into until after you get your results. And then it gives you your top 2 results. The interesting part that I remember doing this is that it doesn't just tell you like the headline. So for example, I'm a teacher creator, but it explains what their definition is and what you can learn from it. So my teacher one, for example, is very much around asking myself and others, what else is happening here? How can I help you? How can I help myself improve things? And it's also kind of about what can you learn from situations? How can they become better? And just figuring out what's known, what's not known. How do people learn best? And also that piece of actually helping others learn and understanding that everybody learns differently. So it's a little more broad than just saying, okay, Christina, now go get your teaching degree and teach 4th grade.
Yes. Yes. Teaching in the much more broad sense, which we all do at some point. It's just whether or not you kind of get that excitement mm-hmm. from it. There's that teaching that we all do, just guiding people through either, you know, learning a new job or learning to train as we train replacements, train other people to take over tasks we started or processes we created. There's a lot of that teaching role that really just like, I want to connect and want to make sure that you mm-hmm. understand that this applies to you and it makes sense to you. And yeah, that's one of the great parts about the stand-up. It talks about the standout exam. It talks about how you operate when you're like at yeah. your best in your 2 top roles. And it's some more about the roles that you're fitting in life and the 2 that really come out most strongly that you feel most connected mm-hmm. to. And I agree with Christina. I think it's way harder to get guide towards an answer while you're going through this survey. For one, because the it's hard to know exactly what they mean just by the word like connector, teacher, advisor. That's not easy to know everything that goes into that. And when they say influencer, this was made in the era before Instagram influencers, so that was a little that was different at the time. But it was it's harder to guide your answers to it, so it kind of gives you a much better snapshot of, hey, this is how you kind of show up, and this is where you feel best. And it's I think all of these really you can work backwards from your personal values. If you kind of go through some of the exercises that we had gone through at the end of the last season, it really they come into play here pretty well. Like mine are pioneer and provider, and so there's a lot of like caring about other people and making sure that people feel supported in that, while looking for the things that are new, looking for how things work, and trying to push forward into like basically the areas that I feel strongest are places that involve curiosity and learning and doing something there. So the pioneer part comes out and the provider part comes out. You can feel a pretty direct tie between the personal values that you find out and the roles that you fit with the standout roles.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the tie into values that you just made, because especially when I read my report through those lenses now, I can see that very clearly. If you know, one of my top values is community and connections with people, and I read the first page of the standout report, which is when I'm at my most powerful, first sentence is, people's performance improves when you're around. This is your greatest gift. Instinctively, people know that you care about them, and that your caring is genuine. You don't give up on people. You are intrigued by the process of helping them out. So clearly, connecting with people is important for me.
Yeah, it's cool to see these kind of come through. And that's, I think, when you do the values exercises, and I did it in reverse order. I did this first, and I did values exercises a little bit later, probably a couple of years later than I'd first done the standout. And it's kind of interesting to see the through line, even after years, because these are some parts that tend to be more core for us, that we, you know, these roles really do fill us with some kind of energy that we like to engage in. And so it's interesting to see these patterns come up over and over again. And we talked about doing a number of assessments. You start to see some patterns in them in general, except the Enneagram, which still makes no sense.
Yeah, I'm sure we could probably go back and find patterns in that one now that we're clear on our values. And I like how most of
Enneagram always felt.
Yes.
Go ahead. I was going to say the Enneagram, but it felt more like a horoscope where you're like, well, yeah, I mean, I could fit into any of these 9 buckets.
Well, one of the pieces of the Enneagram, which I know it's part of self-development, I think they do it, put a huge emphasis on the negativity of your personality and how you show up.
Right.
So it takes a lot of courage to even just read the report. Because you have to kind of reckon with like, oh, yeah, that's me. And at my worst, and how often do I do that?
But that actually is an interesting point, too. It brings us to the Eli assessment we've talked about, the Energy Leadership Index, which is a more point in time, very much variable at the time. But that one talks a lot about, you know, how you're showing up when you're at your best and what happens when you have less optimal feelings. And so that's, I think it's a good tie in. And it is a lot harder when the report and the Enneagram definitely does that, focuses a little more on, hey, here's your weaknesses. And you're like, okay, yeah, I feel it. And that's painful.
Yes.
Which, to be fair, they do this, I think, with standout too. They talk a little bit about like things to help out with, things to watch out for. Like for me, I like doing things that are new and ambiguous, which also tends to have the drawback of not always completing things or wanting to move on to the next thing before, like overly quickly, I guess, would be a nice way of describing it. So there's a lot of, and committing to way too much and all these things that you're like, oh, okay, well, yep, there it is. Those are the obstacles I've tripped over, stubbed my toes on many times throughout life up to this point.
Yeah, definitely. And my second one is creator for the standout. I remember one of the things that I then communicated to my husband so that he could understand me better was the fact that as a creator, and it's the creator in standout, it's not just a person that creates out of nothing. It's more the person that needs to understand how things have come to be what they are. So it needs a lot of background, needs to break things down, needs to understand the tiny little pieces, the connectors, the the concepts, everything, which also means, and they say, you know, if you have a creator on your team, don't just throw a question at them on something they don't know anything about, because they won't be able to answer. They will feel stuck because they have to understand the background first. And that's very much me.
And that one ties in really well with what we'll talk about with the working genius one as well, because that one has a lot to do with kind of stages of work and how what we need to operate best. And it's worth noting for all of these are great examples of like the strengths and some things to look out for. But I think we all know, having just experienced life long enough, we all have to do pieces of all of these roles no matter what. It's just about knowing ones that really speak to us at a deeper level, and we can interact with a little better. We can interact as people better when we're in roles that guide towards these, which allows us to make decisions like, hey, what kind of job would I like to take? What kind of, how do I really want to work? Because we've talked about this a few times. You can have the same job title, but you can approach it entirely differently.
Yeah. And recently you actually pointed out the difference between a software developer and a software engineer.
Yes, this one comes from personal experience. There's a lot of I've worked in the technology space for a long time, and I came at it from I studied things like theoretical math in college. I've done stand-up comedy and acting and all kinds of stuff that eventually kind of led into some technology careers, not directly, obviously, since that is hard to tie directly. But I became more of a software developer because I just enjoyed what you could do with technology. I liked experimenting with the tools, and software development is a lot more of that, like, in my opinion, it is a lot more the developers are the ones who are just, they like the technology piece, and we're working with what can work, what's possible. And then the software engineering portion is much more concerned with, hey, let's really buckle down and figure out what the right efficiencies are, making sure we have everything, you know, as tight as possible, and kind of looking for all the edge cases, which, again, as we were just talking about, this plays in well to the standout result. Like, the pioneer portion of this is charting ahead and seeing what's new, what could happen, you know, getting very curious about and not really caring if not everything is known at the time. And so that feels more like software development. And it doesn't mean that software engineers don't also the developer portion of things, or vice versa. I've had to do lots of let's go back and make sure we have all the right performance pieces in place and we're doing what we need to do. It's just about where you kind of initially react from.
Well, and it's a good distinction, because from the outside world of technology, I wouldn't necessarily know what the difference is between a software developer and a software engineer. I mean, I've always thought it was just preference on title from above.
And that's definitely how it's used too. Yeah. Not a lot of people are like would necessarily make that separation. And if you throw out a software developer job, you'll get just as many people from a software engineering background by the definition that I have just put forward. You'll have people come from either one of those angles. But that is the feeling that I get more when I interact with people. There are some people that split more towards, I just want to break out and try new things and build as much as possible as quickly as possible, versus the like, hey, let's really make sure this works well, is really nicely put together. It's very elegant. It is very efficient, very robust. There's kind of those ends of the spectrum of how the problem is approached.
Yeah. And it's important both for a team perspective and a company perspective to understand the two and who stands on which one, because they're going to interact very differently. They're going to produce very differently. They're going to be at their best in very different situations.
Yeah. And you know, you get the chance to apply them at the right time, right? And that's some of the great part about and that's why standout is fun, is to get to know about yourself. But this actually ties us really well into the next one we want to talk about, which is the working genius one, which is more about where in the process of work do you fit and do you most get the excitement out of? Because when you can know that about yourself and your team, it's easier to like understand, fill in the gaps, and put people where they in places where they will most excel and get better solutions and better projects based on where they are in the overall workflow. So maybe it's a good time to move towards working genius.
I think it is. The working genius was a fun one because when I first did it, first of all, it took me a long time to actually take it. You kept recommending it to me, and I'm like, whatever. And then I can't remember why I did, but I finally did. And I found it extremely interesting, very discerning. And we'll get to the discernment piece. in a bit. And I understood it much more once I started listening to the podcast they did on the Working Genius. So the Working Genius team is actually the Table Group team from Pat Lencioni's company. And they created a whole podcast where they break it down and they explain what each of the results mean, each of the six geniuses, what they mean, how to understand them, how to read them, how to work with those people. And the best part that I like about this is how do you put a team together once you understand where everybody fits? Because if you have a team all of inventors, well, nobody's going to get anything done. You're just going to get a lot of inventions.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's kind of the power of this one. This one is not as much on personality or on your specific strengths necessarily individually. It's more about how you fit into the whole process, which is kind of the exciting part of it. And I remember, I did recommend this many times, and you resisted, and then you got it, and you're like, I think it's wrong. Yes. And then you listen to the podcast, you're like, nope, this was dead on.
Yeah. I thought it was completely wrong. And I'm like, nope, those are not my geniuses. They didn't get it right. And then I listened to the podcast, I'm like, yep, those are exactly my geniuses. They got it perfectly right.
They break it down, like the idea of work and the idea of like a project or something coming out of an initiative, into basically six stages. And you can kind of remember it with their acronym that they use, which is WIDGET. So there's six geniuses, six letters there. You've got the genius of wonder, which is where you kind of think about maybe there's a new way of doing mm-hmm. things. You know, maybe there's an opportunity here for something. And then there's the genius of invention, which is more about, hey, here's a potential solution. I'm just going to throw it out there. Maybe this is, you've questioned whether there could be something, you know, in the wonder phase, you've questioned whether there's something available here. In the invention phase, it's, hey, here's something we could try. And there's the excitement in like the creating, like, I don't know, maybe this would work. Maybe this would work. And then there's the genius of discernment, which comes up next, which is incredibly important, which is the ability to take all the ideas and decide which ones are good and bad. The enjoyment for people who are good at discernment is much more in, hey, yeah, I implicitly understand. I think this will work. I think this will not work. Here's the things that I would change about it. And they're good at like taking and honing ideas to make sure we're on a good path, rather than if you leave it up to inventors and wanderers, it could be just about anything. And that's the fun part for them. And you get to we're through WID, get to the galvanizing portion of this. That's where you bring other people in. You say, hey, this is an idea. We think it's the right idea. We need support. We need people to be excited about this. And those people get really excited about going out and winning the support of the crowd and getting people on board with this idea. Which brings us into enablement. Once you've got those people on board, it's getting people the support they need to get that done. It's making sure that the gift of the genius of enablement is not, you know, in the enabling sense, the negative enabling sense. It's in the kind of coaching, supporting role, where you really plug in and make sure people have what they need so they can do what they really deliver on this idea. And that brings us to the final stage, which is the genius of tenacity, which is just nuts and bolts, getting all the details right and finishing the project out. So you start from this whole, you know, very abstract concept of maybe there's an opportunity here, all the way to now let's see it to its delivery as you go through these six stages.
The other thing that I really liked about the assessment is that it then breaks those down in three categories. So you've got your two working geniuses. So this is what energizes you, what you're good at, and you get energized when you do that. And for me, there are discernment and enablement, which again, when this first came out, I'm like, nope, totally wrong. I am in the inventor and wonder piece. But until I realized what the definition was, and I'm definitely in discernment and enablement, because while I do like to create things, I come from, the creator definition of standout, which is I need to understand where all the pieces are to then discern what's going to work, what doesn't work, what's missing, what are the connecting tissues, what do we need to do from now? And then the enablement piece is very much the encouraging others and providing assistance for project and ideas, because it's like, okay, now that we have a plan, let's get the team together to make the plan happen. And then you've got the working competencies, which are things that I am good at, but will drain me if I had to do a lot of. And for me, those are the galvanizing and the wonder, which was surprising.
Wait, these are the competencies or the frustrations?
No, those are, for me, were the competencies, galvanizing and wonder. So again, like I can cheerlead and get people on board, but if I do it a lot, I get very tired. And the wondering also get tired of, which is I'm capable of pondering possibilities and look at potential opportunities, but that's just not enough. It's draining. The frustration ones, so the working frustrations are the ones that while I have to do that in life and I can't get away from, that's just soul sucking.
It's that's definitely speaks to the energy level, right? It's the second you get in the frustrations, that's where it's draining.
Yes, yes. And the tough part, which also came out from listening to the podcast, was that tenacity for me is one of my working frustrations. So actually getting things done from incompletion from beginning to end. And I know that for a fact, this is not the first time this has come up in assessments and in life, is that like, if I just have to put my head down and just do without any of the other things, I will just, it's soul sucking. And it's tough as a mother.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of tenacity in my daily life all the time.
Yeah. Tenacity ends up being important in a lot of, anything really. I mean, you just have to get some things done, yes. Which I'll go through some of mine as well, because the interesting part is how this starts to mix as a team. So when it comes to my two areas of genius, it's the first one is invention, which makes sense. I just really enjoy creating, as we talked about, like being a software developer versus an engineer, and also just the curiosity pioneer version. It's just it's super interesting to go consider what could happen with what's a possible solution here. What's a possible solution here? Hey, this could totally, we could spin this out into a whole different software product. And I think Christina probably is flashing back to many times where I've said all of those things when she had a random thought. The second one is the wonder. So I really, really heavily lean on the first end of the spectrum here, just thinking about you know, what could be, what is, what if, and where I understand that to be a frustration for Christina and for other people. I could probably sit in a wonder phase most of the day and be perfectly happy, which becomes a problem over time. This is another great example of like, hey, you have to do all six of these things. Nobody can get away from them. It's just about knowing where you best plug in. But then I guess about working competencies, which interestingly are both of your working geniuses, discernment and enablement. So we have pretty good coverage on those two. Yes. But that and also falls then to the working frustrations, which is galvanizing and tenacity.
Yes.
And so the actual getting things done, it's a miracle we've done anything. Yes. And have a podcast that has a second season here.
It is. I'm not quite sure how that's happening, because neither of us are really tenacity people.
We thankfully have known a lot of people who are excellent at it, and we definitely will. We definitely will deliver for deadlines. It's just not always the fun part, I think. But we also have a good system of accountability between the two of us. But this really does point out, like, you kind of need the balance on the team. We have two. We have each other. We're co-founders, and we need to bring other people in when we need to push through some of the larger things.
Yes, we definitely need some galvanizing and tenacity, since it's tenacity's in our both frustrations. So that's just there's no hope for that one. And the galvanizing, it's, you know, I have it in my competency, but it's going to be draining if I do it all the time. And I do feel that. I do feel that, because while I, you know, if I look at social media, for example, I love being on social media. Well, some of it. I love being on LinkedIn and some Instagram. But I love the interaction and the connections I make with people on social media. I like the discernment and the enablement in social media. The having to constantly galvanize for our business, it's draining. It's draining to do all the time.
Yeah. And this is that's a great example, because this is how it applies, you know, in various aspects of a business, of a career, and of life too. It's like you're talking about, you talked to Jeff about being a creator and needing to break things down, because that's how you understand things. That's how you can move forward with things best. This is another good report, even though it sounds, it is a productivity report. It is generally geared towards how work happens, but it's really helpful to know when you think about a household as well, but what are the things that we need right now? What are the things we both excel at? And the interesting part is that for me, anyway, when I was going through this, is that it felt real enough. Like, I understand the frustration of tenacity for me. I understand like that is something that I struggle with, continuing to get back on the grindstone to make sure things complete and finish every detail of. And the interesting part is when you see it as a frustration, you understand it as a frustration, and then I get that reinforced because I know that's a frustration for you as well. It becomes, in my mind, it became very fulfilling of like, does anybody like Tenacity? Does anybody do this? And I have since met people who've taken the assessment, and they do. That's what they enjoy. And I'm so, so grateful.
Yes. It's true. And that's why it's so important to know this in a team. You know, if we go back to, again, the great resignation, great awakening, great adaptation, the great whatever is happening right now, the great humanization, I would like to call it if I had to pick a name, of the workplace right now, I would probably, you know, if I had a team, I would, well, when we do have a team, we do have everybody take this, because if we're forcing people to constantly work in their competency and frustration areas, well, you might as well sign their leave paper when you sign their acceptance letter, because they're going to get there. And right now, they're not tolerating it. People are leaving.
And that's the other interesting thing, too, is that you have the chance then to realize that, like, maybe this person, you know, it's so easy to see somebody who didn't do the task that you asked, or doesn't seem engaged, and be frustrated with them, think that they must be like lazy. They're not finishing what they said they would be, or what they should be doing, or whatever we come up with very quickly in our minds of like writing off this person and saying that they're not pulling their weight around here. I can't believe they wouldn't do this. This gives you a glimpse into what if it's just not the type of work that's going to do well for them. Yeah. And this, I'm going to go back to the idea of like software developers and engineers, and that's just a delineation that I made. But you can have any two software developers, and they could be totally different ends of the spectrum. Maybe one would be a great person to have on R&D for a new project. One's a great person to have on QA and making sure everything is so solid and really well designed, fits well with the rest of the system. Maybe that's where they excel. Maybe the other person excels at something brand new. Totally same title, totally same responsibilities theoretically on paper by job description, totally different approaches.
Yeah. Another big advantage, I think, for teams and projects is when you're thinking about the composition of a team or a project, instead of staffing projects based on bandwidth and whatever other arbitrary non-human decisions are made behind staffing projects, staff them based on the fact that you are going to need all six of the working geniuses on a team, or at least, you know, the majority. You're going to have to make sure you don't have any one that's missing, especially if it's a significant project. And so use the working genius, have everybody take it, which is not going to change all that much. It's not something you have to take before every single project. And so have everybody take it and really use that. Start from there. Start from the human side. When we talk about humanizing the workplace and having a human perspective and a human-centered workplace, this is one of the things that we apply, which is what's the human perspective of staffing a project? And bandwidth or budget, or I don't know what other third random thing it is that is used, it's not humanizing. You're not considering the humans. You're considering the Excel spreadsheet. Get away from the Excel spreadsheet. Put the working genius in an Excel spreadsheet if it makes you feel better. But look at the humans and realize that, hey, if this is a project where we're creating something new and you don't have a single person that has a working genius in invention, you're going to have a problem.
And it's also a great idea for teams to know how each other interacts, right? Because then if you know that you just based on timelines, budgets, deadlines, just who's currently available, if you know that you're going to have a gap, it's so much easier to acknowledge that up front and have everybody kind of chip in on the area that they know that they're not going to necessarily enjoy or relate well to, and just acknowledge it up front. It's you know, classic change management. It's classic anything that has to do with change or any kind of work, which might result in some kind of frustration. It's better to get that buy-in and understanding. Say like, look, we happen to have a team of inventors right now or something, and we need to get this one thing done. So, you know, let's set the expectation now that these next 3 days or whatever we have to finish this might not be the best, but might not be the most enjoyable or connected to us, but we all can see the importance of this, understand why we're doing it, and understand that yes, it might be frustrating, but we're going to do this for a different purpose, a different reason. Having this kind of shared language allows you to have that conversation.
Indeed, that's an excellent point. It's like, it's not about always putting people in a position and in a role or a task or a project where their working geniuses are the only thing that they need to focus on. It's about acknowledging what's going to happen, acknowledging that, like, we're humans, we all have our gifts and we all have our frustrations, and sometimes we just have to, you know, spend the next 2 weeks making appointments for vaccines for the kids. Do I love it? Absolutely not. But am I going to do it? I'm going to do it.
Yep. And that's a great example, because that ties to a pretty large purpose. The purpose is the health of your kids. Yeah, I'm going to dive right in on the tenacity portion of this.
Exactly.
Is it frustrating to have to refresh this page a lot? Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course it is. But it's important.
Yes. And click on literally every single link from the website on to find an available slot that doesn't say this clinic is full multiple times a day. Yeah, not fun. Wouldn't do it every day. Am I going to get it done? Of course I'm going to get it done.
Yes. And that's the other great part. We've said this a couple times already, but you don't escape other portions of work. You'll have to do some pieces of them, but it's so much easier to face this when you have a language, you understand what might be frustrating about it, and you have a chance to go approach that. You know, for tenacity, for me, one of the fun parts is coming up with the system to get myself back to it. And I've come up with different ways of, you know, basically incentivizing, creating habits, creating the right way to get back into a workflow process so that I will finish those things. And that, you know, that way I can kind of apply the areas that I do enjoy to the areas I know I will be frustrated at if I don't have something I find enjoyable about it. And so it gives you this whole other framework to evaluate, tell yourself, okay, here's how I can apply this. Here's what's exciting about something, even if the actual task isn't.
Yeah, all very good things. And to kind of tie it back to Standout, which is the assessment that Marcus Beckingham has created, one of the things that he always talks about is that we only need to be dedicating 20% of our time to what we love to do. So it's not about 100%. On a work week, it really is about one day out of the work week. If we could do a little over one day of things that we love, then the rest of the week will go by. We'll find this enough energy to get through the rest.
I heard an interesting kind of inverse concept of that. I think it comes from German, because of course German has a word for this. They call it like a hate day. So like basically you've designated a day on like a month or a week or something. You're like, yep, this is going to be my admin task day or something. This is when I catch up on, you know, emails and scheduling or something. Or this is going to be, I know this is not going to be the good day, but I'm just going to bucket it and do that. But I really love the idea of having basically, you don't actually need to be in flow all the time, nor is it in any way possible to be in a flow all the time. But if you have, you know, up to 20% or whatever of flow, you're going to carry through the rest and you're going to feel fine about it, which is a good reason to take care of yourself, to figure out what you need, what works for flow for you, and to find and carve out the time to do it, because it will allow you to do the things that you currently feel frustrated about, you feel like you have to do too much of. I'm trying to remember the stat now, but there was some article about employees and people in general are something like, I think it was 10 times more effective when working in flow. So if you think about, you know, if you spend an hour in flow, that's worth 10 hours. You know, you increase that to 2 hours. That's like 20 hours worth of effort, worth of productivity, worth of something that feels engaging. So it's something to keep in mind too, is that it's not just about finding these, because it will help keep people, you know, a little more sane. There's huge productivity boosts if you tap into this.
There definitely is. I mean, the advantages are all around and the benefits are all around, and it doesn't take that much at all.
Yeah.
It just takes some getting out of the default mode. It takes getting out of, oh, let me just look at somebody's resume and decide how they fit in this box I created for them.
You don't think that works?
I don't know. Does it work with cats?
Every single time.
Put them in a cage?
Yeah, they love it. Always.
Yeah, I would say it works just as well with humans.
Yeah, that's about right.
lots of scratching, lots of screaming, and until they finally, you know, chew the latch out of the lock and get the hell out.
Yeah. So if you don't want that to happen, if you want to avoid the great resignation, awakening, humanization, great white shark that we have going on, these are good ways to tap into it.
Yes. Very much so. And we will put the links of all of these areas and assessments in our show notes. We do not get any endorsements. We do not get any advertising.
No, we're just endorsing for free here.
Yes. Yeah, it's just free advertising. Maybe one day the Table Group and Marcus Buckingham's association will look back and be like, oh, we have to pay you back on endorsements. But that's not what we do. We do it because we want people to stop leaving their jobs. Well, continue to leave your jobs if it's draining.
If they're
you.
Bad jobs, please leave.
Yes, please continue to leave. No, but seriously, we want to see humans being treated like humans.
Yes. That's the whole point of knowing about these things and taking these kind of rules and giving these. And that's one of the things I love about the Working Genius. It's so easily applicable to a larger organization. These are the beginnings of answers when people are like, I know there's a morale problem. I know that I have employees who are frustrated, but I don't know what to do. These are great places to start. It gives you a ton of information and a very actionable plan for what do I need to do going forward.
Yeah. And call us if you need that plan. We have lots of ideas.
It's true. Yes, we apply all of these in workshops. These are exactly how we start a lot of good culture initiatives and good changes to help people understand and live a much more human workplace, a human experience.
Yeah, exactly. We do our own advertising. My galvanizing is strained, but I'm trying to get it out there.
It is super. It's easy though when you find the things that you're excited about. Like that's one thing that's been just a blast about doing CMO and doing this podcast. Yes, there's tenacity that goes into this, but it's just so enjoyable to have this, and there's such a purpose that is so clear. It's easy to push through some of the more straining parts for the majority of the time because it just means so much to be able to do this, and it's nice to kind of connect to something that feels like it has a larger purpose, and that's I think what we've both found here.
It is. So have fun and let us know what you find out.
Yeah. Let us know what you think. And thank you for coming back for season two. We're super excited. Please check out any of season one you might have missed, especially some of the stuff we went through at the end for values and our previous guests. Because, man, we had an all-star cast and we already have many recorded for this season that are just incredible people. So really looking forward to sharing that with you. Thank you guys so much for coming back for season two.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Uncover the Human, a Siamo podcast.
Special thanks to our podcast operations wizard, Jake Lara, and our score creator, Rachel Sherwood.
If you have enjoyed this episode, please share, review, and subscribe. You can find our episodes wherever you listen to podcasts.
We would love to hear from you with feedback, topic ideas, or questions. You can reach us at podcast@wearesiamo.com or at our website, wearesiamo.com, LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook. We Are Siamo is spelled WEARESIAMO.
Until next time, listen to yourself, listen to others, and always uncover the human.